Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And good morning. Oh, welcome to another edition of Leading Edge Medicine. We are live in the studio on this beautiful last Saturday of summer. Can you believe that, Dr. Mixon?
Yes,
I can. Last Saturday, yes. But we should get some sunshine all this week to remind us that it's starting to change a bit, getting ready for fall.
Yeah, because the temperature is going to be dropping into the 70s.
That's right.
Upper 60s. And so, yeah, that's kind of fallish.
Kind of a nice ease.
That's
nice,
right?
Transition.
Friends down in Texas are still running.
Oh, 90, boy.
90 to 95 degrees every day. And
you know, 100% humidity. And oh,
they're envying our 70 degree days.
Oh, yes, we love our weather. That's why we live here. Well, welcome to the show. My name is Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. Dr. Samira Umat off for this weekend. However, we do have Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho. So he is our pain specialist. And if you are dealing with aches and pains in your hips, in your legs, in your joints, maybe you got a diagnosis of sciatica and you're like, what is that? Maybe your neck's bothering you, or you're just like, okay, I'm falling apart. I'm in pain. I need to talk to somebody. Dr. Nelson, you're that guy, right?
I am that guy.
You are that guy. So he is the guy with your questions today. And, of course, Dr. Jerry Mixon here.
I'm still here.
Oh, yes, with all of those other questions we tend to get in our last show. Just had one right after the other from the minute we opened the microphones. And that's the way we get all of the calls through. We don't want anybody waiting until the last minute. But here is our number to get through with your question this morning on Leading Edge Medicine. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. So while we're waiting for that first phone call, let's dive in to find out what's going on in medical news. And I thought I heard about something new, not a COVID thing, but something else that's
a different bat virus.
A different bat. Okay, so it's a real thing maybe. So why don't you fill us in?
Nipah virus.
Okay. Yeah.
Nipah virus. Of course, we don't have any cases in America.
Oh, okay.
Or in Europe, or in Asia. It's only in India right now.
Wow, and how many people have the Nipah virus?
Well, last time I saw it was five.
5 million?
No, five.
Five?
Five, yeah. One, two,
total.
Three, four, five.
Five total.
Five total. And so they're warning us all about Nipah virus now.
Slow news this week?
Must be. Now, the Nipah virus is a nasty virus.
Okay.
It is, again, a bat virus, but it's from a fruit bat. And typically humans get it because the bats that are infected are eating some of the fruit. And then the humans pick the fruit because the bat didn't eat it all. He had one or two little bites, but his saliva left the virus in the fruit. And the human eats the fruit and gets the virus. Or they take the fruit and they squish it and make fruit juice. And then you drink the fruit juice and you get the virus. The Indian authorities are concerned because they're saying that there is some airborne transmission from person to person. And so they're afraid that it might become easily airborne. It takes really close contact right now. So it's, you know, same household with, lots of hugging and kissing sort of stuff. So I wouldn't get terribly concerned about it thus far. But, you know, the Indian authorities do not want another COVID in their country. And so they're.
Yes.
And they know that everybody's now blaming China, I think appropriately, for the COVID. Mm-hmm. But they don't want it to be something that India gets blamed
for. Oh, yes.
You know.
The new China. Oh,
that's
boy. Right.
But at least it's not coming out of an Indian laboratory. It is, in fact, a real live zoonotic infection where animals get it and then humans get caught in the crossfire.
Wow. So. Okay. So if you hear about the Nipah virus, don't freak out. Don't grab your masks.
Nope.
Nothing
nope.
here in the
Nothing here in
United
America
States.
Or anywhere except one northern province of India.
Okay. And if you happen to be traveling there, be concerned. If not, then...
That's right.
No. All right. Anything else going on in our news? What is COVID looking like right now?
COVID is here.
Okay.
You know, we're getting a little rise and fall, but it's not big.
It's a cold or flu.
For the vast majority of people that are not seriously immunocompromised, it is a mild cold or flu. Of more concern are those vaccine-like autoimmune sorts of processes that can come from either the infection or the vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, even though we may have a very mild cold-like illness, we may end up with downstream sorts of COVID-related problems. I mean, this is a virus that does have a wide range of late effects as opposed to just the runny nose and cough you get with it when you first get the infection.
Okay.
So, but that's all still being looked at, and we really don't have a great picture of where it's going as yet.
All right.
So right now, Dr. Mixon, the COVID, would you say it's endemic and that's
going to
stay that way?
Yes. It's been in the human population for 3 years.
Right.
It's not leaving.
And which is kind of the natural history almost of viruses,
it
correct?
Is, yes. Yeah. We get an organism that jumps into the human race, and initially it is really nasty and a lot of people die from it.
Mm.
And then as it weeds out the most susceptible among the host population, that is, the people that are going to die. The rest of us are more resistant to it, and then the virus starts mutating and adjusting itself to the host, and it tends over time to become less and less dangerous. And that seems to be exactly what happened with COVID.
Kind of like a peaceful coexistence.
Hmm. Yes, yeah.
Okay.
You know, people don't realize that the coronavirus, even before COVID, 30% of all the colds in America were caused by coronavirus. It's just that we had two, now we have three.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, and someday there will be a fourth. I mean, it's just that it happens.
Okay.
So it's nothing to get terribly excited about unless we get a really nasty mutation that does occur. But so far, the mutations are not nasty actors.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're doing fine. We're just going to watch the situation. And if it starts looking like it's really and truly dangerous instead of just an excuse to grab power by politicians,
mm-hmm.
I'll talk to you about it.
Well, election year is coming up.
And they've got to find a way to get us all back in masks and send out, you know, unrequested mail-in ballots to, you know, twice as many people as there are real voters, and then see what happens with the election.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Dr. Mixon. We also have Dr. Dan Nelson in the studio. John is our next caller. So there we go. So let's go to the phones. And if you have a question, get in quick. 206-421-5757. John from Tacoma, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. So I found out last week that I get to upgrade my Cancer Smorgasbord T-shirt to 13.
Oh, boy.
And so anyway, in 2016, I had a melanoma on my hand. And they kind of screwed up the removal, and they had to do it twice, and then they went after lymph nodes and everything, and it's basically been a non-issue since then.
Okay.
But they did a some ultrasounds and then eventually a PET scan. And turns out that there's 5 lymph nodes on the inside of my shoulder in a ring.
Yeah.
That now have melanoma, but it hasn't gone anywhere else.
Okay.
And so the trick is that they have this, you pick one of 6 treatment things. So, you know, like surgery, which seems to me is probably a good idea. But then they want to, do you want to do infusion? Do you want to take pills? Do you want to do chemo and that sort of thing? And I guess Keytruda is one of the choices. And so I was just wondering if you had any insights on that.
Not in great detail. Malignant melanoma is a really nasty actor. And once it spreads, we've got big problems because it tends to spread early and it tends to spread fast. And if you've got a series of 5 nodes that are already that you know of that are infected, I would not be shocked to discover there are other little nidus's of it hidden elsewhere that we just don't know about. What you want to do is get something that's going to get that tumor systemically. Are any of the options they're giving you some of the newer immunotherapies where they actually are training your immune system to recognize and go after this tumor?
It's the Fred Hutch guys, and I think they did, but it was kind of a shoot fast list of things. Is there a specific identification for those things?
I wish I could give it to you, but no, I can't.
Okay, but what was the characteristic name of it?
It's not a name. What's going on is there are, and I don't know if these are in general use or if they're still in the experimental stages, but I've seen papers on where they actually go in, they get a piece of the tumor, and they then use that tumor's genome to train a immunotherapy, an immune response, so that your own body goes in and now recognizes the tumor because they used part of the tumor to basically train this malleable drug. And it allows your own immune system to identify and destroy the tumors and hunt them out wherever they may be. And that, in the few cases it's been used so far, has been really remarkable in people with advanced disease, that they're getting survival when in past years we never would have. What I'd have to do is go back in and find those papers and do some, get in contact with you. Do me a favor. Go on our website to contact us and send me as much detailed information as you can of what your choices are that you've been given, because they probably gave you some papers and some names.
Right.
And I'll go through and find that last paper that I was reading. It's been a few months, because melanoma is outside of my field of practice. You know, we treat the normal but undesired changes of aging. We're typically anti-aging doctors. We are melanoma doctors. So I didn't memorize it all, but I know where I put it, and I can find the papers, and I'll send it off to you, and you can then run it by your docs at the Hutch, okay?
I'll do that. And I was your patient once upon a time.
Okay, well,
really appreciate it. So
let me see what I can do to help. All right, take care.
All right.
All right, the music is telling us to take a quick commercial break, and we are back with more of your calls. 206-421-5757. Ed, Noni, we'll be back with you in just a moment. Stay right there. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, Dr. Dan Nelson of Pro Ortho, and your calls today at 206-421-5757. We're headed to, you'll never guess, so I won't make you guess, Nashville.
Nashville.
How about that? Yeah, we could say Nashville, but then they'd think we were tourists. So yes. Nashville. Ed is there. Hi there, Ed.
Hello.
Howdy.
This is a voice you haven't heard from a long time. I've been living in Nashville for about 6 months now. I have a new set of doctors. Previously, they were KP. I have a problem of dizziness. When I move from laying to sitting to standing, when I'm walking and turn too suddenly, I have a set of ENT people who said it is not any mineral ear problem, it is eyeball problem. The eyeball people say it is not that. Went to cardiology, they set me on a flat table, put their finger on my wrist and brought me up fast and said, "Yuck!" My question was, is that a medical term? And his answer was yes.
Yes, it is.
Your blood pressure is, yeah, it's a blood problem. Mm. So they have sent me to multiple doctors, all of which are supposed to be experts, and I'm still right back where I started. I'm 93 years old, and that's part of the problem, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, they have no particular answers. I've read through the stuff online about diet, and everything conceivable can cause you a problem, including D3. So my question is, being a genius that you are, or maybe just a very experienced, do you have a suggestion?
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions first. You know, one of my adages, first diagnosis, then therapy.
Yep.
All right.
Yes.
When they put their fingers on your pulse and sat you up, your blood pressure dropped out. Is that right?
No, went way up.
Oh, it went way up. That's interesting.
Or down. Now, I don't remember which one he said, but I thought it went way up.
Okay, see, typically what will happen is what we call postural hypotension. And when someone is sitting or laying and then they suddenly come upright, the blood all rushes down to their feet and out of their head, and that makes them lightheaded and dizzy, and sometimes they fall down. But the reasons for that can be the heart rate can slow way down. You could go into atrial fibrillation with an abnormal rhythm. The heart rhythm may be okay, but the blood vessels, the arterioles and the veins, are simply not constricting to push the blood back up to your head. They can just stay flaccid and the blood runs downhill. So we got to sort out why your blood pressure is suddenly changing. And typically at your age and with the symptoms you're describing, it would be going down, not up. Now, it could be the heart rate went way up.
It went to 185 for the high number.
Okay. If your blood pressure went that high, then you need to be on an antihypertensive medication. You need to be on something to keep your blood pressure from going high. And I wouldn't think, I mean, if you've got several cardiologists, that should be a no-brainer for the cardiologist to write you a blood pressure drug.
Well, typically my morning pressure is 130 to 145 and occasionally up to 150 when I wake up in the morning and move slowly into a position to take the sitting position.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And occasionally I'll get 155, but that's rare.
Yeah, I'm not sure why your pressure would rise that high when you go from recumbent to sitting. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
You're back. You're a challenge because you go backwards from what everybody else does.
Yeah, well, that's true. Everybody else goes down. That's why I was assuming it was probably down.
Hmm.
Well, what does your heart rate do when your pressure goes up? Does your heart slow down or speed up or stay same?
I stay at about a constant 50 to 60, low 50s to low 60s.
Okay.
The range of my pulse.
All right. So a lot slower than average for a guy in his 90s. Usually 90-year-olds tend to have more rapid pulses. So, yeah, you really are doing everything a little bit different from what is normally found. Hmm. So, have they set you up with a cardiologist to do a more extensive workup and try to figure out what's going on?
That's basically each one. They've given me a number of them, and each one have said, basically, I haven't got a solution for you.
Huh. Okay. I don't know why they wouldn't be somebody there with one, but I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't have your records, obviously, and I can't examine you. I'm just the guy on the radio.
Correct.
But your story does not bring any immediate responses to mind, except that I would be interested in stopping that sudden rise in blood pressure, and there's a lot of medicines we could try to do that. I thought is something like enalapril, an ACE inhibitor of some sort. But, you know, I can't prescribe it for you, and I need a better workup before I could. So, I don't know. I would pick the cardiologist in the bunch and go camp on his doorstep and get another appointment and say, look, you know, this is disrupting my life. I'm afraid I'm going to fall down the stairs and break my neck. I need a solution. Would you pretty please find something you're at least willing to try and see what happens? Because
they took me off of metoprolol and put me on a non-heart, but proved activity, and I have taken that since the beginning of July, and so far no changes.
Do you know what drug? Can you tell me what drug they did put you on?
No, I cannot, because I cannot. I'm blind, so I cannot read it. But it was an off-label activity.
Okay. Yeah. Once more, I might tell you more if I knew what the drug was, but, you know, I'm really, you're blind and I'm in the blind at the moment. So, all right. Now, I'm afraid I'm not in a position to help, my friend. I wish I could, but this is one of those where it just plain stumps the doctor. I don't have enough information to make a rational decision, so I'm going to have to pass.
Next Saturday, I'll call in again and have that particular drug in front of me with large print.
Okay, it'll have to be the Saturday after next, because next Saturday we have a pre-recorded show. Dr. Umat and I both have to be out of town. So, but we'll Saturday afterwards.
Yep. 2 weeks away. We'll be back live.
All right. Thank you for the call, sir.
Thank you, Ed.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Okay, the phone lines are open for your next call for 206-421-5757, 206-421-5757 for Leading Edge Medicine this morning. We are going to go to Sun City, Arizona now. Noni is on the line. Hi, Noni.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling about the lady with the migraines, and I have some suggestions that she might try. One is, I also have migraine and respond to rapid barometric pressure changes. And I discovered a little device called a Zook, Z-O, with a line over the top, K. And it's online, and it's about $24 to $34. And then to determine about what's going on with barometric pressure, I have an app on my phone, the WeatherX app, And so that alerts me when there's a rapid change. Back in about 2003 or so, my doctor recommended that I try a beta blocker, a very old drug called atenolol, which mm-hmm. is usually used for blood pressure, but it has been very helpful to divert migraine for me. It did for years, and now it doesn't so much anymore. But then I use rizatriptan for migraines, which I found to be useful. It's not as expensive as a lot of the other current medications. And then I also went to a neuromuscular specialist who helped me immensely. In fact, she interrupted my migraine cycle, or whatever you call it. Anyway, so I don't have so many migraines now. So that's what I have to offer today.
Oh, Noni, thank you for that.
Thank you, dear.
Is Dr. Nelson still there?
Yes.
Noni, I'm still here. I was waiting to say hi to you. But thanks for that call and for that useful information.
Mm-hmm.
How's the weather down there in Sun City?
It was good to see you. Well, it was only 92 today when I went to the pool and then did my walk after breakfast.
92, you probably had to put a jacket on.
Oh, boy, yes.
Yeah, Arizona.
I know. Back to reality, but I had a wonderful time up there, and the traffic is worse than ever.
Yes,
yes.
All right. Yes. Well, thank you, Noni, for the call.
Yes.
Take care.
You're welcome. I hope it's helpful.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with more of your questions. No 92 weather here. Our high in Seattle is 77 and partly sunny. We'll take it. We'll take
Definitely.
It. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. Stay right there.
After driving out the memory of the way things might have been,
we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette. Dr. Jerry Mixon here. Dr. Dan Nelson of Pro Ortho. He is our pain specialist. And you can contact Dr. Dan Nelson and his team at Pro Ortho at 425-823-4000. You can also go to his website. Easy to remember. It's DanielNelsonMD.com. All right, DanielNelsonMD.com, and get all the information you need about him, himself, his clinic, what they do, and how they do it. There you go. I love websites. There's so much information and where they're located and directions and all of that. Okay, we are taking phone calls today. If you would like to have a question for Dr. Mixon or Dr. Nelson, today is the day to give us a call. Here is that number. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. And we have Ray on the line calling in from Tacoma. Hi, Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Hello, ma'am. I think this question is for Dr. Nelson. I was listening mm-hmm. to the other station, and we were talking about, I think it was a lady that had elbow problems, and mm-hmm. The discussion was of a cream to put on her elbow before she put the brace on.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
That was the KetoCam.
The KetoCam cream, I think, is what we were talking about at the time, which is mm-hmm. ketoprofen and piroxicam.
That's right, ketoprofen, piroxicam, yeah. It's okay.
What's it called?
KetoCam. The chemicals are ketoprofen and piroxicam, which is why we came up with the name KetoCam. It's a custom compounded cream that, Paramount Pharmacy makes for our patients.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not over the counter or anything.
No, it is a prescription cream.
Oh, okay. All right, sir. That's all I needed to know.
Okay. Take care, sir.
Okay.
All right. That was pretty an easy one.
Yep.
And if somebody's needing to know that KetoCam, K-E-T-O,
C-A-M.
Okay. Yeah. Just like it sounds.
And you just have your doctor send a prescription to Paramount, and Paramount sends it right out to your home the next day.
Very good.
And they're great. Paramount, we use them for
That's
a lot
who
of
I
things.
Use too.
And, there's KetoCam, but they've got all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very helpful for making suggestions about, adding this or adding that, depending, because KetoCam is basically a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory.
Yes, it is.
There's other things.
But they can add narcotics to it. They can add analeptic agents to it and anesthetics and all sorts of stuff. My mother, when she had her pacemaker put in, had an intractable nerve pain from the incision for the pacemaker pocket, and that nerve pain was just driving her totally crazy. They sent her to the pain clinics at the university and everything, and nobody came up with a solution until one of the guys at my clinic wrote a prescription for a nerve blocker, and it was basically they started with KetoCam and they added a little bit of narcotic, and then they added
gabapentin. Did they put in there, or
they can put in gabapentin? And I think this one also had I forget which of the ketamine. Had a little bit of ketamine. And she put that on in the morning and mid afternoon, and it was totally pain free.
Wow.
Because they can custom amounts of whatever medicines the doctor thinks they want to use. And with hers, since that pain was totally disabling her life, just making her totally miserable, she couldn't sleep at night. A little bit of cream applied to the incision twice a day, and she was pain-free.
Wow.
Yeah,
there you go. Wonderful.
The ketamine is pretty amazing, actually.
It really is.
It's a pretty amazing drug that they're now using for depression in some situations.
As a nasal spray.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow. All right. We are taking more calls today. It's Leading Edge Medicine. You can call us, too. Phone lines are open at 206-421-5757. We are headed to the Puyallup Fair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I can smell the scones.
I was actually at the fair last weekend.
Oh, yes.
Really?
And they're still going. They're still going. I think I smell the scones. Stan, greetings, and thank you for calling Leading Edge Medicine. How can we help?
Question is regarding a situation my wife has had for quite some time. She's 67 years old, and 5-6 years ago at least, she had a pretty severe abdominal pain and rushed her into the ER. And they diagnosed her that she had a perforated colon that was from a diverticulitis situation. Mm-hmm. And so they gave her antibiotics and so forth and released her and said, you need to make an appointment with a gastroenterologist, which she did. And they went to do a colonoscopy, and they had to do a virtual one because the area was so inflamed that the doctor didn't want to go through it.
Uh-huh.
So they scheduled a colon section surgery, which she had done, and it went very well. I mean, she was released with really no pain, no issues very soon. But ever since then, she's had quite an irritable bowel situation where, after she has a meal, within 20 minutes to a half hour and so forth, she's got to find her way to the bathroom. And, of course, it's a very loose stool. So a couple questions here. Number one, explain to us, if you could, obviously the colon's a little shorter. I think they took out something like 6-7 inches is what they ended up taking out.
All right.
But obviously, what she's eating at that time doesn't make it all the way to the other end right away. Explain what's happening there. Why does that irritate what's in the colon from when you initially eat? Okay?
All right. Well, You start your digestion in your mouth, actually. The saliva has a series of digestive enzymes to start breaking things down. You swallow it, and it mixes with the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, which, again, starts ripping apart the proteins. And then it gets into the duodenum, the first part of the small bowel, and now your pancreas is squirting lipases and peptidases and everything else in there to start breaking down all that food. And as the food goes through your small bowel, it's liquid all the way through. And it enters the colon, the large bowel, in the right lower area, right lower pelvis. And that comes into the colon as a liquid form. And then as the colon contracts rhythmically, it pushes that liquid forward and starts reabsorbing the water. And part of the job of the colon is to conserve water. So it starts pulling that out, and as the food residue travels on through the colon, it gets thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker until when it finally gets all the way down to the rectum, it's supposed to be kind of a semi-solid. Okay? If the colon is moving too slow, it gets to be really hard, and now you're trying to poop marbles or a brick out. So that's not what you want. So you want things to move through fast enough that they don't get too much of the water reabsorbed. As those muscles are contracting to push that through, as it's getting thicker, it's having to push harder and harder and harder to move the stuff through as it gets thicker and thicker and firmer and firmer. And so at some point, those muscles are pushing hard enough that the bowel wall between the muscle starts to bulge outward. And that forms what we call a diverticulum. It's a little pouch between the muscular fibers that that contracting muscle is actually making a little hernia in the bowel wall. Okay? Diverticulitis is when those little pouches get infected. And that infected area then can increase the pressure to the point that it can actually rupture and blow a hole through that weakened portion of the bowel. And now you've got
that's what she had, yeah.
That's right. Now you've got an acute surgical emergency because now you got poop getting dumped out into your belly, out of the bowel.
Right.
Okay. And this, of course, can kill you.
Right?
Now. All right, we are now at the point we have to take a quick break. I'm going to come back after I've just hung all the crepe and said it could kill you.
Yes.
We'll talk about...
to be continued.
What goes from there. This is kind of a cliffhanger. When I was a
kid,
right. You know, poor Nell was always tied to the railroad tracks
boy.
At this point.
That's right. And Mountie would come by with his
That's
horse.
Right.
Oh, boy. We'll be back. Stan, you stay on the line. And there's room for you as well. 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
Now the race is on, and here comes pride in the backstretch. Heartache going to the inside. My tears are holding back there. I'm trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. Two love scratch for another saint. The race is on, and it looks like heartache. And the winner loses all.
Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there, and good morning. I'm Lynette. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, and also Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho. If you have pain questions about your spine, your hip, a doctor says you need a knee replacement. Are there options? Yeah, and we could talk about that as well. So this is the show. Give us a call. We'd love to have you be part of it. We will be recorded next week since the doctors are out of town getting more knowledge. And then we will return in 2 weeks from today. So if you've got a question, don't put it off. Give us a call at 206-421-5757. And when last we left Dr. Mixon, he was talking about IBS and something that would kill us.
No, that was not IBS.
It was IBS, the perforated something rather for diverticulitis. We were talking
that's
with
right.
Stan.
That's a bowel perforation.
Ooh.
From diverticulitis. No, IBS is irritable bowel syndrome.
Okay,
which
something
is a whole
different.
Different issue.
Okay.
However, she has now had her surgery. They have taken out a segment of bowel that had been damaged. And now she's having, if I understand it, irritability and frequent stools. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, that would be correct. And it's most of the time. However, she have what we call a normal stool every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to relate to what she eats. She can eat one kind of meal or another. Not predictable that one causes it more than another. But it is pretty annoying. And we were wondering, because the section they actually removed was fairly close to the rectum. Mm-hmm. And so help me here. My understanding is the colon, of course, is absorbing the water out of your stool.
Right.
So apparently all the time the stool that's in her colon must be pretty watery, because when she eats a meal, and of course that starts to move, and like you say, mm-hmm. 20 minutes, it comes out as diarrhea, essentially.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, basically what you're describing is what we call the gastrocolic reflex. When you eat and food starts going into the upper part of the bowel, the lower part of the bowel kind of goes into overdrive, and that peristalsis, that muscle contractions to move things through, speeds way up. And that's the idea, is you have to empty things from below to make room for the stuff coming down from above. And so,
I see.
Although generally in most people, it's a 24 to 48 hour journey from stomach right. to rectum. But if that colon has gotten irritated enough and inflamed, it'll move things through really fast. I mean, you can mm-hmm. eat corn for lunch and poop it at dinner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's highly variable. Right. And it sounds like what's happening with your wife is that somewhere in the process of doing the surgery, which, by the way, clearly needed to be done because it saved her life. She'd have died had they not, because she'd have ended up with peritonitis. Something has left enough irritation there, inflammation. And I can think of several possibilities, and none of them can I prove on the radio, because it would involve your gastroenterologist doing some imaging studies and some vascular studies and so on. But the blood supply to that colon goes in sections, in segments. Okay. And what they do when they take out that piece of the colon is they have to identify the blood supply and make sure that the part they take out only has that one area of blood supply. They don't want to damage the blood supply to other parts of the colon. Mm-hmm. But in the process of doing the surgery, you can trigger enough scar tissue formation that it can start to actually constrict some of the blood vessels and limit the blood supply to part of the bowel. And that scarring that is now decreasing the vascular supply means that part of the bowel that's not getting quite as much blood as it should gets really inflamed and irritable because it's being starved for nutrition. Okay. And that in turn can put this peristalsis into super high gear, just because you've got an inflamed, irritated part of bowel that is not getting the full healthy blood supply that it needs. And that doesn't mean anybody did anything wrong in the surgery. It's just that when you get that scar tissue postoperatively, just because, you know, the bowel's not designed to be handled. And when you've got to do the surgery, you handle it a lot. And some degree of scarring is just totally unavoidable. And once in a while, somebody gets a little bit unlucky. Now, the good news is it doesn't sound like she's got enough embarrassment there that it's putting her in any danger. It's mostly a nuisance factor.
Yeah, I would exactly call it that.
Yeah.
I will say this. She's tried various things to try and mitigate the situation, make it better. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, if she takes Imodium. Imodium does help.
Slows that down.
And so forth.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if it's something I want to have to take the rest of my life all the time. Are there negatives to taking something like that, or is there something perhaps better?
Well, Imodium is actually a narcotic, and it slows down the bowel. All narcotics cause constipation. It's just a very mild one, doesn't make her loopy, doesn't get her terribly addicted, but it does slow down bowel transit a bit. The other thing you could try, although maybe she already has, is just a big fiber load, a great big load of something like a psyllium husk. What is that called? The commercial version.
Brand. Metamucil type.
Metamucil. Stuff? Yeah. Yeah. Metamucil or Fibercon. These tend to moderate. If you're constipated, they pull enough fluid in that you poop better. If you're having diarrhea, they thicken things enough that you poop a little less. So they're kind of moderators of the two extremes in the colon. So you might just try some Metamucil and see if it helps.
Okay. Mm. So one last question. What your take is on this. As you get older and where we're at, you know, late 60s, early 70s for myself, we have some concern only because we've had friends have some very negative issues over the years in terms of colonoscopies. Is there any truth to the thought that your colon wall, like a lot, your skin gets thinner and everything else? Does the colon become more susceptible to a quote unquote injury or rupture during a colonoscopy when you're older? Is there any worry to that?
Yes. The fact is that all of our tissue gets more fragile as we get older. Our skin, our heart, our lungs, our blood vessels, our colon. But on the other hand, the gastroenterologists that do a lot of colonoscopies are really good at it. You know, it is what they do one after another, after another, after another. And it's mostly old people getting colonoscopies. Very few, you know, healthy 20-year-olds are getting their colon looked at. It's us old folks. On the one hand, yeah, it's a theoretical consideration. As a practicality, these guys are good at what they do.
I see. So the last thing I will say is, when she had this rupture event, they immediately put her on a antibiotic.
Yep.
And 2 days later, they sent her home saying, "You're not cured. You need to see a gastroenterologist, but you're stable for now." So she got that done. She went to have a colonoscopy done, and from our regular doctor, who she's had many, and he said, "Well, I couldn't safely get by the area with the camera and so forth."
All right. The music says we got to take a quick break. We'll finish this in just about another minute or two. Okay. Sit tight.
You stay right there, Stan. And the phone lines are clear enough for you to make a phone call as well. I'll give you that number so you can get your question in for the doctors at 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and we will be right back. Stay right there.